The newscast is produced by Monica Lopez and Simba Russo. Headlines editors are Randy Zimmerman and Mel Abram. DC editor is Mitch Jezerich. Our technical production team includes Jade Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone, Mick Millen, and Lindsay Benedict. We have technical assistance from Eric Klein. For more information or archives of our newscasts, you can visit our website at www.fsrn.org. I'm Aura Bogado.
Hi, this is Lou Reed, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
Thank you, Lou. It's 5:59 and 30 seconds. Ah, what the heck. We're going to start early this week. Off the Wall is on the air. Okay, I know. The music's playing too long. It's just, you know, everything that can go wrong will go wrong if you give it a chance. And this latest thing, I really don't even understand why it's happening like this. But not your problem. My problem, not your problem. You know what? Let's do one last Newfoundland thing. I've got a song here about Newfoundland. And then I promise I'm off it. You know, I'm off the Newfoundland kick. But this is kind of a cool song because I think it's their anthem, actually. Yeah, I think it's called Ode to Newfoundland, and I have it on a CD that I got up there, and it's kind of neat. And then after that, we'll launch right into things. With a vengeance, I promise.
When sun rays crown thy pine-clad hills, and summer spreads her hand, when silvern voices shimmering white at winter's stern command, through shortened day and starlit night, we love thee, frozen land. We love thee, we love thee, we love thee, frozen land. When
Yeah, and you know, that's an interesting song because when I saw a TV station signing off the air, CBC in Newfoundland, they played this song. I didn't know what it was. It's this weird kind of chanting type of music, and it wasn't until I looked up the lyrics, "We love this frozen land," or whatever it is they say, I realized that that's the famous Ode to Newfoundland, and it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. If you ever get a chance to see a Canadian TV station sign off the air, you don't get that in America because they always stay on with infomercials and garbage like that. But it's kind of cool because they play the Canadian national anthem and there's virtually no military presence in it. And I just think that's kind of a cool thing, you know, to have no military presence in your national anthem. They have, you know, birds flying and bears and moose and snow and trees and things like that, you know, and occasionally people. But they don't have marching troops and people with their fist raised in the air and all the kinds of things that we're getting used to here. And the song is just so much nicer, too. Who can dispute that O Canada sounds better than the Star Mangled Banner? I mean, whatever it's called. It's awful, awful song. I don't mean to sound like, you know, an ingrate or a counter-revolutionary, whatever people like me are called these days. But the song sucks, okay? America the Beautiful, that's a great song. This Land is Your Land. That's a wonderful song. Those are appropriate national anthems. Born to Run, huh? Or really any Springsteen song. But Star Spangled Banner, I don't know what they were on. I know it's some kind of a drinking song that sort of got vandalized into a national anthem. I don't know. Anyway, so you get to see the station signing off the air, because a lot of them do that at about 2 o'clock in the morning, sometimes even earlier. And invariably, they go to a test pattern. Some stations simply show a camera from their studio window where you can see the city. It's really kind of cool. I mean, it sounds weird to say that you prefer TV stations go off the air at night than to broadcast continually. But there's something to be said for it. When you're in a foreign country and you realize that, hey, all the TV stations are off the air now. There's nothing on. It just saves a lot of time than having to scroll through 300 channels and reach the same conclusion. And, you know, it might force you to do something else, like read a book. Oh, that's just how I feel about that. It somehow also makes the programming a little bit better because it's not always there. Anyway, so after they play the Canadian National Anthem on this particular station only, they played the what I now know as the Ode to Newfoundland. And I think that's kind of cool, because imagine a station signing off here in the United States and then playing the Ode to New York or something like that. You know, we don't have anthems for our particular regions. It's just, it's different. But there's a distinct kind of distinctness that we don't have here. Quebec is very different from Ontario, And Nunavut is extraordinarily different from British Columbia. And the Maritimes, in their own world. Newfoundland was its own country up until 1949. And you know what else? When I was driving through there, I was listening to some radio stations, and I thought I was on drugs or something, but they were identifying themselves not with the letter C, as just about every TV and radio station in Canada has their call letters beginning with, but V. That's right, the letter V. And so I did a little research when I got back, and it turns out that, yes, indeed, Newfoundland did at one point, before they became part of Canada, they had radio stations that began with the letter V. And these are grandfathered in. So if you're listening to a radio station and it begins with the letter V in Newfoundland, it's because it's been on the air in some form or another since before 1949. I thought that's pretty gosh darn cool. And the call letters mean something on many different levels as well. By the way, I'm not going to spend the whole show talking about this. It's just kind of an interesting thing. Let's see. I looked this up. Hang on a second. TV station call signs in Canada are usually made up of four letters, although two stations have three call letters, such as CKX in Brandon, Manitoba, and CKY in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Some have five call letters. Can you imagine that? WUSBF. WUSBY. Yeah, some do have five letters. The first call letter is always C, and call signs of privately owned stations usually start with the two-letter combinations of CF, CH, or CI. And CI was added in the 60s. That's how specific it is. Also CJ or CK. Not the two that we read before, CKX, CKY. Probably related, they're both in Manitoba. Now, call letters beginning with the combination CB are reserved for Citizens Band Radio. No, for CBC-owned stations. And I remember when I was a kid, I used to do DXing on my AM radio. That's where you listen to distant radio stations. Furthest I ever got from here on Long Island was WBAP in Dallas, Texas. Which is pretty good, you know, for an AM radio sitting in your room. But I also would hear all these Canadian stations. And it was really pretty cool. I would hear CBM from Montreal, and I think CBL from Toronto. And usually the letter would indicate the city that they were coming from. But sometimes, as in the case with CBL Toronto, that was not the case. But that's gone away. That's something that you don't really hear anymore. They don't identify themselves. And also, just about every CBC station has gone off the AM band, so you can't even get them anymore in this country late at night. Anyway, TV stations are not obligated to identify themselves over the air by their call letters, so many TV stations never use their call letters on the air. In fact, when I was talking to the person in Newfoundland outside the CBC studios, CBC radio studios, she didn't even know what the call letters were to the station that she worked at. There is no clear rule for the call letters of repeater stations. Some repeaters are labeled by the call letters of the originating station, followed by a number, while others have their own distinct call letters. Low-power repeater transmitters have their own unique call sign format, which consists of the letters CH followed by four numbers. And that's just broadcast. That doesn't even get into all the cable business that's going on there. That's pretty interesting, though. Now, major commercial radio broadcast groups in Canada, I don't believe they include Clear Channel. They include Rogers, Chorus, Standard Broadcasting, Shum Limited, and NewCap. And smaller broadcasters operate radio stations as well. And the publicly owned Canadian Broadcasting Corporation operates four national radio networks, two in English and two in French. English Radio 1 and the French Premier Chan provide news and information programming to most communities in Canada, regardless of size, on either the AM or FM band. The English Radio 2 and French Chan Culturel provide arts and culture programming, including classical music, opera, and they're always on FM, generally serving larger communities. You know, somebody wrote in to tell us about Radio 3. There's a Radio 3 in Canada. However, it's not broadcasting. It's only on the net. And supposedly they broadcast independent music and things like that. So check it out. CBC.ca. I'm sure it's in there someplace. I haven't had a chance to yet. But just some interesting facts about Canadian broadcasting. Now here, of course, the letters W and K, they are used. Generally, W is used east of the Mississippi, K is used west of the Mississippi, with a few exceptions. KDKA in Pittsburgh, KYW in Philadelphia. That's a really cool exception. Three letters and begins with a K on the East Coast. That's because of grandfathering. There are some stations that still have three letters, not allowed anymore. Some stations that begin with K on the wrong side of the Mississippi, that's not allowed either. And Mexico, their stations begin with X and all kinds of other things. All right. I was one of the things I was struggling with before I came in here, actually, everything went wrong. Usually what I do is I print out various bits of information for the radio program. And I was just, you know, sitting in the office printing away, you know, all these, this would be a good story, this is a nice letter, I'm going to, you know, read this. And when I walked into the printer room, there was nothing there. The printer apparently has fallen off the network somehow. And, you know, there wasn't enough time to diagnose this and figure it out. So I couldn't print anything. I couldn't print things out. Hey, look who's here.
What do you mean, look who's here?
Well, you can hear who's here. Actually, you can look who's
here. You televise yourself?
Yeah, we're actually on camera this week. They're doing a new thing where they're broadcasting this to the students to apparently encourage them to stay in school because this could happen to you. I didn't quite get the whole story, but you should step up to the camera just and wave and say hi.
Maybe not.
Oh, that's right. You don't go on camera, do you?
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
Although I am an institutional investor in August.
Well, first of all, let's introduce who you are. Because
people know who I am.
The voice of Chris Crowley, who is heard on this radio station occasionally. In fact, I was listening to you the other day on Brain Damage from 1988.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I was even born then.
You're getting old. That's amazing.
I really am old.
I mean, I just keep finding another year of radio that I did before the one that I just put on the net.
Well, what's the oldest thing you have on the net right now?
1989. So I'm going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
1988 is the first year of Brain Damage. But I should warn people, you think it's over then, though it's not. There's more before Brain Damage.
Do you have stuff like the Ministry of Truth?
Ministry of Truth is another radio program. That, I don't know where they are. They're around someplace.
Why you, that's me rubbing my hands.
Rubbing your hands.
That's a great show.
You think so? I don't even remember it.
That was what got me into WUSB.
You're kidding.
Nope, because that show was so awesome. And then I picked up on Steve Kreitzer's show, which was totally awesome, and Maximum Rock and Roll, which another fantastic show. And do you know Steve Kreitzer's right out in the studio here?
Well, he's the one who put the camera here.
Oh.
So, yeah, he's not going to go far, especially with you in the room. But, those were the days, you know. Do you remember when Ministry of Truth?
What do you mean, those were the days?
Those were the days. These aren't the days.
These are still the
these
days.
These are not the,
the
days.
The days are always the days.
Look around you. These are the days? Give me a break.
No. I think great things are happening.
Oh, you want to fill us in, please? Because we could use it.
Every time I think there's, like, horrible music or whatever, I turn on a show and, you know, wham, there's something fantastic coming out.
So you weren't listening to USB on the way over here, I guess.
I was.
Cause I wasn't
they
playing.
Started up the news late, yeah.
Oh, really, did they? Well, they ended on time somehow. Yeah. No, that wasn't a slam at any other show except mine, because I do a talk show, and the only music I was playing was the old Newfoundland.
Yeah, there's a lot of great music coming out of this station.
Uh-huh. You mean that we're playing? We're
not that they're playing, yeah, that they're playing.
Okay. Well, that's good, that's good.
In the local shows, they seem to be promoting a lot of the
music,
great local
but
bands.
When I say these aren't the days, I'm not confining that to music. I'm confining that to the human race.
Hmm.
And, you know, how we're all, like, on a metro line to hell right now. It seems that way.
In fact, that's what supports great art, isn't it?
Misery?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess you're right about that.
It's true.
So we'll get some art out of this whole thing.
Yep.
But we may not survive to appreciate it, but maybe the alien culture that finds our remains can get a kick out of it. Well, next week this show's not going to be on the air because I'm going to be in the city dealing with the RNC and all kinds of other things.
So you're going into Manhattan by choice.
I'm going into there by choice. I'm going to be at the new Ground Zero. And
would you be willing to put a mask on and carry my badge and sit at my desk from 9 to 6 and just pretend
you're me? I'd love to do that. But here's the thing. I don't think you put on a mask. I think that's not allowed. A lot of things are not allowed. You know,
that's right.
You can't wear any kind of mask over your face. You can't wear a gas mask. You can't wear a bulletproof vest. If a cop shoots you, you have to accept the bullet.
Well, you can't wear a bulletproof vest anyway.
Why? Why can't you wear a bulletproof vest? I don't understand that.
It's because then basically you're
protected.
Unstoppable.
Uh-huh. So you need to be stopped, in other words.
Yes, they have to be able to shoot you and kill you.
Okay, when you explain it that way, it makes sense. Anyway, so I was explaining to the folks just why I got all disorganized this week, and the printer didn't work. I wasn't able to print things out, and then I had this solution all planned out. Well, not planned out, but planned out as soon as I realized the printer wasn't working, and that was to copy the things that I was going to print out to my little USB device.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are cool. Those are cool. You plug them into the side of laptops or Macintoshes or any kind of computer, and it's like a hard disk, except you could swallow it.
Yeah.
Practically. So I looked in my pocket and it wasn't there.
Oh.
And so now I'm freaking out because my USB device is missing. I can't find it anywhere. It's got all kinds of stuff on it. I like an idiot, I didn't encrypt it, you know?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I usually encrypt things, but this was so handy. It just goes in my pocket and goes into the machine. What could go wrong? Well, it fell out of my pocket, apparently. That's what can go wrong. So I've been searching all over the place, and maybe about a minute before you walked in, I found it in my other pocket.
Hey.
There it is. That's what it sounds like falling out.
Well, that's what you get for wearing those kind of pants.
But, of course, yeah, that's the thing. I have, like, 30 different pockets in these pants. And
so you just threw that thing on the ground. I was wondering, are those pretty indestructible?
I'll throw it up. Now I hit the ceiling, now I hit the ground. Well,
they're that indestructible.
I don't know. I never did that before. But I think they are. I think they are.
Wow.
But, you know, as long as this is in my possession, I don't care if I break it. I care if I lose it because...
Well, would you encrypt it now,
compromising information. I will encrypt it now, but I can't encrypt it holding it in my hand.
Compromising? What would you consider compromising?
Believe me, if I consider it compromising, it's compromising.
It's compromising, buddy.
Anyway, it's going right back into this pocket. And anyway, the point is, I wasn't able to copy it onto there because I didn't know I had it there. It was hiding in another pocket, which, by the way, I searched. I don't know why I didn't find it.
Hmm.
So what I did was, and you'll appreciate this, I created a Hotmail account for myself, and I mailed the pieces of mail that I wanted to read to myself, and I made a password that's very easy, and I don't care about this account. I'm going to delete it as soon as I finish it tonight. The thing that's weird, though, is that for some reason, only 5 of the pieces of email showed up, and there were 7 altogether. I don't know why 2 of them didn't show up.
Maybe you had some sort of filter on there or something.
I don't know, but there's nothing I can do about it now.
Well, what surprises me, you don't have any spam in there yet.
Well, it's only been open for about half an hour.
That's plenty of time.
All right. So anyway, I can now tell people about certain things. Like today they found, or recently they found, the bodies of 3 Austrian soldiers killed in World War I, frozen, almost perfectly preserved in an Italian alpine glacier.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that something? Can you imagine how frightening that must have been for the person who found them?
Well, is it one of those things where they can bring him back to life, like in some sci-fi movie?
You know, I think this is reality and they can't do things like that, but who knows? Who knows? Using binoculars, I saw what looked like a stain on the Forney Glacier and went to look, this guy who found them. When I got close, I discovered they were the bodies of soldiers frozen in the glacier. Nothing like this has ever happened in my lifetime. Bodies haven't been found in the ice around here for decades. The soldiers' uniforms are mostly intact, including leather belts, a gas mask, and a cap with a star in it. So that's kind of interesting thing.
Kind
right
of
there.
Austin Powers-ish.
Yeah, I guess. Here's a letter about CBC Radio. I was just talking about that, actually.
Yeah, that's listening.
Part of the reason for larger studios in each regional area is twofold. I was commenting a week or two ago about how in Newfoundland, where they produce very little original music, at least on Radio 2, why were the studios so big? Why was the building so big? Well, one reason is because each CBC radio station produces a wealth of live programming and pre-recorded programming. Another reason is because, due to the size of Canada and the great distance between large metropolitan areas, it's easier for CBC to conduct interviews with people by studio radio linking instead of other methods. Thirdly...
You lost me.
Well, basically, I guess instead of instead of having people travel to Toronto or something like that, it's better for them to go to Halifax or St. John's because it's closer, so they'll do the interview there even though the show is in some other city. Thirdly, perhaps most importantly, actually, didn't this person say the reason was twofold? Now we're up to reason number three. All right.
Trifold.
Trifold, yeah. Perhaps most importantly, CBC Radio could be classified in Canada as an essential emergency service, partially because it is completely government-funded. As such, each CBC Radio studio maintains the capability to function as a totally autonomous entity to keep the populace notified in case of emergency or some sort or a network outage. And this is actually the person that sent information about CBC Radio 3. If you go to www.cbcradio3.com, it's a fantastic site for tons of great small bands that you may never have heard of. It's a great way to experience new small band music and avoid the huge monopolistic practices of the corporate record labels.
Anyone who's still doing, you know, feeling they're victimized by the corporate record labels is a complete fool.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
There's so much out there, and it's so easily accessible. There's so many bands just dumping their music for free.
Absolutely.
I'm amazed the record companies are still in business.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think it's going to last much longer the way they're going. Unless they change their attitude.
Well, unless they come up with something.
Yeah. Let's see. And this person also writes in, you asked on the show, wouldn't it be nice if a state in our damn union just had all kinds of different music?
Like, did you say the D word?
I might have done that. I might have done that, and I just did it again. Anyway, I think Louisiana might. Don't know, we're racing on the tape. I think Louisiana might be your answer. I'm from Acadia, which is the name for the south central region of Louisiana where Cajun culture is located, and that makes sense because that's comes from Acadia from Nova Scotia. Cajun music is directly descended from the folk music of Acadia, which is where we were kicked out of in 1755. Cajun culture has managed to survive since then here in Acadia. We still play, listen to, and celebrate Cajun folk music, and we are very proud of our Cajun culture. That's great, and I am aware of that. But you know what's different? If you go to Nova Scotia, you go to Newfoundland, you will hear radio stations that have this kind of music. You will hear radio stations speaking in different languages based on those cultures. I went to Louisiana. I went to New Orleans. I didn't hear a single French radio station. I didn't hear anybody speaking French, actually.
Really?
I wasn't really, you know, going to people's houses and things, but, you know, on the streets, there was the French district, but it was mostly tourists.
Yeah.
But there was no real sense of, you know, a different culture taking place.
Latin Quarter, everything cost a dollar.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think if we had more of that in this country, we'd be in better shape. But that kind of diversity seems to be frowned upon.
When were you in New Orleans?
I was in New Orleans.
New Orleans. It's one syllable.
Well, I was in there on the way back from, on the way to the whole Kevin Mitnick being finally freed from the thing last year. So that was kind of cool. We met some people from the New Orleans 2600 chapter, and that was fun. Here's another letter, and you can send your letters to otw@2600.com. This person works at Staples. The employees have to use their Social Security number to get into the register. However, just recently we have changed the time clock number. It's no longer our Social Security number. We're using a 7-digit number. why didn't this change sooner? And is it really that much more secure? No, because the Social Security number is still put into the register and it's still shown on the receipts.
What?
Is that true?
Wait, so this person who's working in Staples, they give a receipt that has their Social Security number on it?
No. I find that really hard to
believe.
Well, I'm going straight over to Staples after the show. I'm going to buy something.
That's a gold mine.
Social Security number shows up on the receipt because that's the height of stupidity. That's the pinnacle.
Yeah.
You can't get any higher than that.
Yeah.
Printing Social Security numbers on receipts, I don't know. All right, and finally, this is the last one that was able to get through. Maybe more will be sent through during the course of the show.
Oh, you have it forwarding?
No, I just mailed 7 pieces of email to this account so I could read it here.
Oh, I see. So there's 2 more that are...
Yeah. I saw a great poster at a building at my college where they do research for the government. It has a guy talking on a cell phone with the caption, "Can you hear me now? Foreign powers can listen in on cell phone conversation." Oh, I think Verizon should sue them for that.
All they got to do is take the Long Island Railroad. All right, go ahead.
I'll try to interpret that later. It says that it's from the Defense Intelligence Agency. Maybe someone should tell the DIA about the crypto phone, signed Matthew. Oh, I just realized what you were saying. People talk so loud on the
screen. So loud.
You can hear everything they're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, now what we're going to do is I'm going to delete all of those messages, and by doing that, maybe that will open up my... Although I should have a lot more space.
I think Hotmail lets you have more than five pieces of mail.
Maybe if one person sends seven pieces, it freaks out or something and says you're
a spammer.
Yeah, that might be it. Okay, well then, what's going on in the world? I was talking last week about my hassle with banks. Do you know my local bank, and everybody has been shocked that I've told this to, my local bank charges you a fee for depositing cash.
What?
Yes, it's true.
And you moved your account someplace else promptly.
Here's the thing, you know, I'm not sure that this isn't done in other banks as well, because, first of all, this was conference money, so it was a fair amount. You know, and they charge you 10 cents.
Come on, what's a fair amount?
10 cents per $100. Enough that you'd notice.
Whoa, 10 cents per 100? That adds up.
It does add up. It does add up. If you have, you know, a few thousand bucks in there, it adds up.
Huh.
And, you know, you might not notice if you deposit, you know, occasional bits of cash, but it's possible that other banks have this as well. I was stunned. I was amazed. And then I had this whole problem with Chase where I was trying to get them to turn my credit card into automatically paying the full amount every month, which they did on two of my three accounts, but they wouldn't do it on the third one because they didn't like the way that my checks looked, because the checks were corporate checks. They said they had to be personal checks. I got into this whole big debate with them saying, look, you already did it twice on my other two accounts. I sent you the same corporate checks, and it was no problem. And they got stuck in a routine saying, but sir, we can't do that. I'm like, yes, but you already did it. But we can't do it, but you already did it. You know, and that went back and forth for a little while. I finally got a supervisor who said he was sorry and fixed the whole thing, which is great. But on my statement that I just got, I noticed this little charge. And this was from before this conversation, so it wasn't retribution or anything like that. $525 for annual charge from July to June.
What?
And I called them, and I said, what is this? My MasterCards are free. You don't pay a yearly thing. I asked, well, what is this? And they said, well, that's interesting. It doesn't say what the company name is. It just says miscellaneous. And so he went away for literally 5 or 6 minutes. And he came back and said, sir, I'm just going to give you credit. Looks like we messed up here. But it just goes to show you, if you don't look at every little item, and that's a big item, though. Items, little items, they're just going to charge you for things, and you know, it may not be correct. You got to be careful.
Well, that's what I wonder with taxes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because, you know, how do you know that? It just says taxes. How do you know that it's the right amount and that you're being charged the right amount?
You don't.
Yeah.
You really don't.
You really have to have, like, what, a great accountant, and then look at what they charge to look through everything.
Yeah. And, you know, and just to finish this topic because I'm just in bitch mode here as far as banks and credit cards go. They just installed a whole bunch of new ATMs. You know, those, like, drive-up ATMs?
Yeah.
They're kind of cool.
With Braille on them.
With Braille on them. I won't get into that. You know, you could have a passenger. I don't know. I'm not really sure. But they have new ones now. And for some reason, there are no envelopes. So, I mean, how do you deposit something when there's no envelopes? And I went to three different ones because my bank replaced all of them.
Hmm.
And they all have the same problem. No envelopes. And I'm cussing up the storm, and I know I'm being recorded by the camera because they always have cameras on these things.
Yeah.
And I'm yelling at the camera saying, where are the envelopes? No answer. Sometimes a little voice in the loudspeaker comes through.
Well, they don't have the little button to press for assistance?
No, not at the drive-up ones.
Mine does.
Really?
You got to go to my bank.
Maybe I will. So anyway, I found out later that when you actually start the transaction, a little thing opens, clicks open, and you can get the envelopes from behind a locked door.
No.
Yeah. But the thing is, once that starts, it's beeping at you to finish your transaction. But you haven't even gotten the envelope yet, so how can you finish the transaction quickly when you've just got access to the envelope? You have to pull the envelope out, and you have to fill the thing out. At least you're supposed to. I never do. But, you know, and it's beeping, saying, hurry up, hurry up. And there's people behind you, they're beeping up with their
horns.
Oh. It's a very stressful thing. So I took, like, 30 of the envelopes.
Yeah, that'll never happen again.
So, yeah, well, the thing is, they did this to save envelopes. I don't think it's going to work, you know? They should reconsider this policy.
Especially since you probably have lost all the 29 other envelopes.
Well, no, I know where they are.
You know where they are?
Yeah. They're not in my pocket, I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
So, what else is going on? World events. You're not going to be at RNC next week?
Well, I'm be right down the road.
That's right. You have
waving
to work.
At
you have to work
yeah.
in the city. You have to go to Penn Station every day.
Well, I'm the fool who took my vacation this week. The one good thing I did was that I got great weather, mm-hmm. and that is a total fluke.
Yeah, you did get great weather. You did.
Amazing. It's like around 80 every day and sunny for the rest of my vacation.
I wonder what's going to be like next week when all the protests are going on. It's really crazy that everybody is so freaked out about what's going to be happening. So many people are taking off, just don't want to be around. So many people aren't coming into work.
Businesses are closing down.
I know people who know cops. Actually, I know cops myself. But without exception, the cops are telling people, stay away. It's going to be really bad. You don't want to be anywhere near there. And you just have to wonder what they've been told to reach that conclusion.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything I've heard is from the protest camp is that things are going to be peaceful. Things are going to be, you know, harmonious. You know, maybe they know something that we don't.
Well,
but
is
in any
it,
event,
is it really the protesters they're worried about?
I don't know what they're worried about. Well, that's what they always say. They always say that the protesters are the ones that are going to cause trouble. And, you know, they're not the ones that cause trouble. The ones who cause trouble are the ones who lock down the city and turn it into an armed camp. You know, it makes no sense to me what the city is getting out of this conference at all. You know, they're losing money because businesses have to close. People are scared out of their wits. You know, I don't mean to sound like there's nothing to worry about, but nothing has happened in this country since 9/11. It's true. Nothing has happened, right?
You had to say that.
Well, I'm just saying it for the record. Nothing has happened. And do you really think something is going to happen at the place where everybody says something is going to happen? That's not how terrorists work. Terrorists work by surprising people, you know?
Yeah.
So they'll hit, you know, some other place. I'm not going to give specific names because then they'll think I'm targeting them. But the point is, you know, you will never be able to stop terrorism. You just won't. And I've been thinking about this over the past couple of weeks, and this goes with my archiving all my videos because I've been going through hundreds and hundreds of them and seeing just what I have and writing it down. And I have all this footage of the war from last year, a lot of BBC footage too, stuff that was not shown in this country. And I see a lot of the things that they don't want us to see, such as soldiers kicking in doors and screaming at children and you know, citizens and throwing them to the ground and just really terrifying them. And when you realize that these people don't speak English, they don't know what's going on, these people are foreign soldiers, and doing all kinds of horrible things, and whether or not you agree that this is horrible, from their perspective, it is. You know, when you have people bursting into your town, taking over, and running things their way and intimidating you, it's a horrible thing. This is not going to play well in history. This is not going to be something that we look back on if we survive this and are proud of. So what I'm wondering is, with all this racked up security and all this paranoia, how much of it is for the sake of security and how much of it is actually sort of guilt? Realizing that, you know what, we're really pissing off the world and at some point, might not be today, might not be tomorrow, at some point, they're going to want payback. And, you know, we keep doing these things. We keep, you know, making our way known by force. Someday, something bad's going to happen as a result of that, and I just see in the desperation, you know, it's not because of more threats. You know, people keep coming up with more scenarios. Yeah, someone could take a helicopter and fly it into a building. Wow, we never thought of that before, you know? Yeah, anything is possible. You can always plant explosives. You can always, you know, shoot people, blow things up. You know, I'm not advocating any of that, obviously, but that's never going to go away. You will always be able to cause mayhem. The thing is, you want to create a society where people don't want to cause mayhem, such as Norway, where they stole the Scream a few days ago.
Yeah,
can you believe that? They stole the Scream.
Good thing there's four of them.
Well, this was the one. I saw it. When I was in Oslo,
What do you mean, this is the one?
This is the
there's
the,
four...
Yeah, but this is the one that they consider the Scream, the original, the final copy, whatever.
Okay,
you know?
All right.
The other ones are different versions, I suppose, but this is the one. Which is why it was in the museum. And I saw it. You know, I went there, and everybody's posing in front of it. And here's the thing. When you're in Norway or any Scandinavian country...
No guns.
No guns. No no crime to speak of. There is crime, of course, but no real crime. And you don't see cops anywhere. You really don't. They're the exception, not the rule. So you have a situation like this. Yeah, people could go in there any time and cause mayhem, and if they're good, as these people were, actually steal a painting. And the reason they were able to do this was because they had guns, or they had toy guns or something, and that probably is more of a crime there than stealing the painting.
Yeah.
Because it's just not in the society. So, of course, someone produces a gun, people do what they say. I'm not surprised at all. What I hope is that Norway doesn't get all crazy and paranoid and change things and have armed guards everywhere now and lock their doors and various other things like that just because of the actions of a few people.
It'd be kind of ironic over the a painting called The Scream.
Yeah. And, you know, I hope they find it, too, because it really is a great painting and people should, you know, have the freedom to see it. But remember, in Sweden, too, last year, one of the main candidates for prime minister was stabbed and killed in a department store.
Huh?
She had no bodyguards at all. That's the culture there, not to have bodyguards, not to have a gun type of society, not to have police at every corner.
Hmm.
And, yeah, sometimes you have to pay the price for that. Sometimes somebody takes advantage of it and does something really bad. But to be honest, are we any better right now with this armed camp mentality, people with Uzis and machine guns standing in front of train stations, demands for ID, bags being searched? You know, this is not what I signed up for in this country, I'll tell you that.
Well, you know, I wore down on the Wall Street area now,
mm-hmm.
and going down there past those guards with the really big guns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they almost bumped into me once.
Yeah.
Because it's like a crowded street. There's all these tourists, and
I
was touched by one of those guns. I was like, holy moly.
You were moved by the gun?
Yeah. it was purely an accident. He was just turning around and then hit me,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't hurt or anything, but I was like, jeez.
Yeah.
I suppose the thing went off.
Well, you know, that's the thing. What in God's name can you do with those things, especially in a subway station? You know, what are you going to do, open up automatic fire on a suspect?
Well, I haven't seen them in the subway stations, but
I have.
They are in front of the New York Stock Exchange.
They're in front of Citigroup. They're in front of Penn Station. It's insane. It's insane, you know? And
they're in front of Penn Station?
Yeah, they are.
I haven't seen that.
They're all over the place. They're all over anywhere that the RNC is going to be.
Hmm.
And this just basically intimidates the populace. It's a horrible thing, and not one of these people, and not a thousand of these people, could have prevented 9/11. You know, just wouldn't have done a damn thing. So,
well, some security at the airports probably would
have. Some security at the airport, but you know what? It's still possible to get sharp objects through security, or to simply create sharp objects out of things that are already on airplanes. I can think of 100 ways to do things that would be very bad, and I'm sure a lot of other people can as well.
Hmm.
You know, you will never get to a situation where you can't do this. So I think, you know, you're better off finding a society where people aren't always trying to do horrible things.
Well, it's kind of like when you're in prison,
mm-hmm.
and people
yes.
still manage to come up, you know, they turn a spoon into, like, a deadly blade that slices somebody's neck open.
Now,
and
someone in kindergarten can do the same thing, but they don't do it because it's not prison, you see? Prison is a thing that people are trying to cause mayhem and get out of, and, you know, in many cases, not always, there are a lot of law-abiding prisoners. But the thing is, you know, when you create a society where that seems to be what people are trying to do, more people will try to do it, and you will never get out of it.
Hmm.
It'll just keep getting worse. You know, a couple of years ago, seeing people walking around with machine guns would have shocked everybody, and now it's like, you know, no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, you bump into them on the street.
Well, a lot of people now, they're like, oh, thank goodness, I see the machine guns.
Yeah,
that's
really,
safe now.
That's, I'm going to be safe with the machine gun. But here's the other thing. You also have, and this ties into all the bad things that we're doing, you have situations like Guantanamo Bay, where you have 600 prisoners there from foreign countries that are being held without charge, except I think four of them were charged. And now the military tribunal is starting, okay? It started today, and they're hearing evidence, and it's all being done pretty much behind closed doors. And without, not in keeping with the rules of our society. We're basically making up new rules because these are foreigners. But the thing is, you know, if these are foreigners, then are they prisoners of war? What exactly are they? What status? We've created a brand new status for these people.
Hmm.
And, you know, the rest of the world sees this, and it just seems like we're out of control. You know, we have this military camp in some other country. God knows why we are even in Cuba in the first place. We should not be there. They should kick us the hell out. Don't you think? I mean, it's Cuba, for God's sake. We pay something like 50 cents a year to rent this place. I'm sure that's not the deal they want, but they're not going to... they're intimidated by us. They really are.
Cuba?
Cuba. Guantanamo Bay is on Cuba. Yeah, it's right... I mean, it's bizarre. It really
is
bizarre.
That is weird.
Yesterday, the trial started for some of the soldiers that... well, for I think one of the soldiers involved in the prisoner torture that you know that this country undertook, or some soldiers in this country undertook. It was the lead story in all the foreign media, and through my Canadian dish, I'm able to see a lot of foreign media. In this place, the Lacey Peterson trial got more attention, or the Scott Peterson trial got more attention. It was buried. It really was buried. You had to search for it.
See, I just heard the Pacifica News, and they had it fairly prominent.
Yeah, Pacifica News or Free Speech Radio News will do that. Okay, now I've got a story here that I'm reading off the web. A day after a similar case was decided in the city's favor, another group was in court Tuesday seeking to stage a massive rally on Central Park's Great Lawn on the eve of the Republican National Convention. That's this coming Sunday. The group United for Peace and Justice has sought a permit for an estimated crowd of 250,000 to protest the Bush administration on Sunday, but the city says that many people would damage the grass, or says that many people would damage the grass, which was restored at a cost of $18 million 7 years ago. They are not prepared to not have a critically important rally at a critically important time in terms... Boy, you know, this guy needs to work on his sentence structure. I'm going to read it again. They are not prepared to not have a critically important rally at a critically important time in terms of both our political history and our First Amendment history, and that's the position the city is trying to put them in.
Whoa.
He's a lawyer, too.
He's definitely a lawyer.
Christopher Dunn, the lawyer for United for Peace and Justice. He said this during nearly 2.5 hours of oral arguments, and that took up 1.5 of the hours. the city says, it's too late. Our question is, why are we here now, said Jonathan Pines, an attorney for the city, when could have been here in May. You know, maybe the copy editor just messed this up.
Yeah.
When the application to the Parks Department was denied, we could have been here in June, we could have been here in July, but no, we're here now with mere days left. There was simply not enough time to do anything other than the West Street rally. After its first application was denied, UPJ had agreed to an alternative location. I can never understand why they did that. On the West Side Highway, but the group reversed itself and filed a lawsuit last week. That spot, they said, could put the health of some elderly demonstrators at risk because of inadequate shade, and it would be too expensive to set up the audio and video equipment. I don't understand what the big deal is. I really don't. You know, you just have a rally in a big park, a big open area. Why do you even need a permit for that? You just gather. You know, I'm going to get a picket sign, and I'm going to go to Central Park with my picket sign. Someone's going to tell me I can't do that. I'm not allowed to go into the park.
With a picket sign? Yeah, that'd be an interesting case. See what happens.
Yeah, and I call on everybody to do the same thing. Just go there.
Well,
just go there. They can't stop you from going into a park. Or maybe they can. Maybe we're in a society now where they can do that.
And then, well, where do they draw the line? So, okay, you're going in with a big sign over your head that says, you know, whatever. What about if you're wearing a T-shirt that says, you know, something anti-Bush?
Right, right.
Are they going to stop you from walking in the park with a T-shirt that says something? When does it end?
They may very well do that. You know, that's what we're... If you give up certain things, it becomes the precedent. It becomes the norm. And you start moving in that direction, and people get used to it. Now, imagine the society we live in today 10 years ago, all right? If it just suddenly happened, people would freak out. They'd say, oh, my God, this is like some kind of science fiction fantasy come to life. We have to stop this. And you know, but people are pretty much complacent now. They're
if you showed them a 62-inch LCD TV, they'd be like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and then two-story SUVs going around. That's an idea a friend and I came up with.
What?
Two-story SUVs. You go into
I'm actually surprised they don't have that.
No, you go into an auto dealer.
I can't believe you didn't apply for a patent on this.
You say, well, maybe one of our listeners can do it and share the money with us. You go into an auto dealer and say, you know, I'm looking for something just a little bit more, you know, because what I want to have, I want to be on top, you know, driving the thing, but the kids can have, like, the bottom level. They can do their, they have a little playpen there, whatever, you know, it's all reinforced by, you know, rubber or whatever. Upstairs would be the adults, and, you know, there'd be seats up there. And
like a double-decker bus.
You might as well, because some of these SUVs I see on the road are just about as big where they could have two stories. So I predict this is going to be a reality, and maybe the people in the future listening to this will say, what's he talking about? This is, like, common. Two-story SUVs, mark my words, it's going to happen. Ask your local automobile dealer. I'll bet they'll say, hey, that's a great idea.
Speaking of automobiles, are you allowed to talk about the you-know-what car?
Smart car?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been talking about it for years. I don't have one yet, but I'm...
You don't have it yet?
No, I
want to. What's the story?
They keep saying it's going to come in another month or something.
Well, many dealers do the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's coming.
You have a Mini.
Yeah.
You like the Mini?
Love it.
I see Minis around, and they're cars.
There are a lot of them. They're not that great on gas, though.
I don't know why they wouldn't be. They're so tiny. They're like grocery carts.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's 25 to 32 miles to the gallon.
See, my car gets that. My car, by the way, I should point this out. 2 weeks ago, right before the show, I meant to point it out that week. I meant to point it out last week, and I forgot. I'm sorry. Broke 200,000 miles. 200,000. I have never, 1993 Toyota, never gotten much above 100,000 in any other car that I've had. Hmm. I'll tell you the history, too, just so people know, because I'm sure they're dying to know. First car I ever bought was a 1966 Impala.
Mm-hmm.
$125 I paid for that.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was, I think I had like 83,000 or something on it when I got it, and I think I got just about up to 100, and that seemed like a lot to me back then.
Mm-hmm.
Next car I got, actually from our chief engineer, Frank Burgert, I bought
really?
A 1964 Chevy Nova.
Nice.
$200 I paid Frank for that.
Muscle car.
Yeah, and that was a good car, too. It was a little smaller, but it was good. And then after that, I bought a...
Except when you go south of the border, it's not so good.
Because it means no go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clever. 1966 Buick Wildcat I bought after that for $450.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a gas guzzler is what it is, and it was the biggest ripoff of my life back then, anyway. but think about, the money that I spent on these cars was, it's piddling.
Yeah.
MasterCard charges me more than that on a whim.
Yeah.
They get away with it. And then after that, I got my first foreign car, which was a 1974 Toyota Corolla. That was that yellow...
I remember that one.
Yeah, it was a good car. That was a good car. And that's when I realized that foreign cars are better than American cars because they get better gas mileage and they last longer. And I had that car for quite a while, a number of years, longer than any other
cars. You
had
that a long time.
Yeah, and I liked the other cars, too, except for the Wildcat. I hated that car. After that, I bought my first new car.
The Hyundai.
The Hyundai. 1989 Hyundai. I liked that car.
No, then you second-guessed. No, that thing was falling apart all the time.
It was falling apart a little bit, but...
What did it make it up to, 50,000 miles?
No, it made it up to, I think around 70 or 80. I don't know.
Because I remember you did not have that for very long at all.
I bought it in 1989, and then in 1993 I drove it to Alaska.
Big mistake.
I left it in Alaska. I actually sold it to somebody for like $50 or something.
Because it was so dead.
Because it was falling apart, yeah. But, it was a cheap car. It was something like $8,000 for a brand new car. Even then, that was a good deal. So then, after that, 1993, I got my Toyota Tercel and had it ever since.
Yeah.
Over 200,000 miles now. Still going. But I do
still
want to get
the same
car.
Clutch, too.
Oh, and then there's the 2600 van, of course, which I got in 1993 as well.
Mm-hmm.
For $900 at an auction.
Still going strong.
Now you have all the information on my automotive history. I wanted to mention this. A great film people should see, and I've already mentioned it to you, is Control Room. I saw it last week.
Oh, yeah.
In New York City. I don't know if it's still playing, but wherever it's playing in various parts of the country, you should run out and see it. Run out tonight and see it. I'm not kidding. This is a movie about...
It's got to be playing at Cinema Arts.
I don't think it is.
Really?
I don't think... Well, it might be. I don't know.
Go to their website.
You know what? You do the typing.
No.
I can't type and talk at the same time.
Right.
You see the monitor over there? There you go. Yeah, it's funny because this is an iMac, and I think you're looking up iMac. No, you're looking up Cinema Arts Center. Control Room is a film about Al Jazeera and the TV network over in Qatar that was covering the Iraq War. The TV network that has been... ostracized here in this country, you get to see firsthand what these guys are doing, who they are, and it's just such an eye-opener. And it's not a one-sided documentary by any stretch of the imagination. If you didn't like Fahrenheit 9/11 because it sounded preachy or just was completely one-sided and you didn't appreciate the humor, whatever, this is something I think you'll like. Even if you support the war, I think you'll like this because you see other sides represented. There's this one guy, there's this Marine who basically does a lot of soul-searching throughout the thing, and at one point, he just says, I realized, watching your footage, that I was outraged seeing the dead U.S. soldiers. And then I realized that you also showed the dead Iraqis in the street, and I wasn't as upset by that. And that really started to bother me. And just the fact that somebody would actually not only do that kind of soul-searching, but talk about it. Talk about it to the world, as this person did. Being a Marine and all that, it makes you really, think that, well, they're not all bad guys, are they? And the people in Al Jazeera saw this as well. They were, friendly with this guy and everything. It just leaves you wanting to know more. And I think that's a really good thing. So Control Room, great film. Totally recommend it. Is it playing anywhere, Chris? Or are you looking at something else?
No.
All right, 631-632-9872 is our phone number. We only have a few minutes left because we've been babbling all this time.
Another great film?
Yeah.
Warzone.
What's that about?
Women being harassed on the street.
Really?
Yeah. Fantastic.
Okay, is that
I saw it at the Pioneer Theater, and they said that they were definitely going to bring it back. But fantastic movie on street harassment, mainly of women. Actually, only of women.
If you can't see Control for whatever reason, at least try to seek out different points of view in the media. Go to BBCnews.com, go to AlJazeera.net.
Guardian.
FSRN.org. Yeah, whatever. Just read different points of view. See other camera angles. Don't just watch CNN and Fox. And
Drudge Report.
Yeah, assume that that's really what's going on. Just yesterday on BBC, in fact, I saw this really good report from somebody who was inside the Holy Shrine in Najaf. You been following this story?
No.
We're basically, we've kicked out Saddam Hussein, but that's not good enough. Now we're going to dictate who gets to do what. And this guy, this radical cleric, is holed up in a holy shrine in Najaf, and we've been bombarding the city on a daily basis. We're saying, you know, this guy isn't allowed to stay here, he's got to leave. And you know what? You know, I'm looking at the story, I'm saying, why are we even involved in this? Why is the United States taking an interest in what this guy is doing? You know, it's almost at a point where I'm sort of hoping it kicks our ass because, you know, is this his country? And if he wants to say, I'm going to, you know, rule this city, he's not even of the same order as Saddam Hussein. He's not one of his people. He's somebody else. Are we gonna go to every single city and say, no, we don't like you. You can't be here. We basically said, yes, we're going to kill this guy. We're going to find him. We're going to kill him. And that's insane.
The new guy?
Yeah, one of the new guys. He's not the new guy. He's somebody who's a radical cleric, but he has a lot of followers. Anyway, this BBC piece I saw yesterday, the reporter was inside the Holy Shrine, and you saw the people in there who are holed up in there, the radical people. They're just regular, unarmed people that seem friendly enough and are just kind of trying to protect their Holy Shrine. And God help us if the shrine gets damaged, because I think that's going to unite all the Iraqis in a way that we have yet to see. Was the phone ringing during that last tirade? I think it was.
I didn't see.
I heard ringing. Oh, well. We're out of time anyway. So, you know, you got to move fast. You know, if you don't move fast, then the opportunity is lost. But, boy, time does go fast, doesn't it? Remember, brain damage used to be 2 hours.
Yeah,
playing Newfoundland music and all that kind of thing. Well, we have an exciting week ahead of us, at least I do. I don't know what's going to happen next week. I really don't, but I think running away doesn't solve anything, and I think that's not the thing to do.
Keeping it peaceful, though.
Keeping it peaceful is essential, but I think that's going to happen regardless, because I think that's the nature of a lot of the people who are going to be there in the first place.
Well, just like right after 9/11 happened, you know, it was chaos, and then boom, like super tranquility.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the nature of people.
By 10 o'clock, it was.
Or the blackout, which I wasn't here for. I really regret missing that. But, you know, there was less crime in the city during the blackout.
I never slept so well.
Did you sleep on the street?
No, I went back to my apartment and just conked out, and it was great.
People were sleeping on the side. I mean, you know, basically, New Yorkers can deal with crises pretty well. I think Americans can deal with crises pretty well. I think people in the world tend to deal with crises pretty damn well. So there's no need to panic, there's no need to run away, but there is a need to stay and not let your city be destroyed by anybody, whether it's people, whether it's Republicans, whether it's the government, you know, whoever you think is threatening the way things are and changing things in a bad way. I have my own views as to what exactly that is. And I know
keeping your civil rights.
Yeah, I think showing up in great numbers to protest what we think is wrong is part of our rights, and showing up at Central Park and infiltrating whatever way possible, saying you can't walk down a street, that's just not acceptable to me. This is your city, you know, live in it, and don't let it be turned into an armed camp. And I have no idea why they just didn't have the conference at an armed camp, since that's what it is. Anyway, that's enough for now. OTW2600.com, Emmanuel Goldstein for Chris. Have yourselves a good night. Off the Hook tomorrow starts at 7:30, special time. See you next week. Or rather, 2 weeks from now. Good night.
becoming the muse. Another bomb becomes diffused, and the terrorists aren't amused. Paisley is getting his shirt off, Sinn Féin are going insane. They strive to divide the countryside, but the borderline remains.
Hi, this is Avocados. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.